Alex Durban. Back for a parking problem.
Emergency, there's somebody got shot at Spinefield Sunoco. Okay, what's the address there, sir? I don't know, 7209, I think. Okay, somebody got shot. The guy is dead.
Wait a minute, man.
He's laying on the car.
We just got you shot out here on, I'm on the corner of Shawmia and Georgia Street.
What's going on there?
There's a dude just got shot here at the intersection.
3 weeks in October 2002, a time seared into our memories.
Stepping over the line, shooting a kid. I guess it's getting to be really, really personal now.
Absolute horror. This isn't supposed to happen in a community like this.
As two murderous snipers encircled the Washington, D.C. area, a time when we all realized that our life or death in those 22 days was just a matter of chance. I'm Melanie Olenwick. Thanks for joining us.
And I'm Bob Barnard. This is our podcast, 3 Weeks of Hell, the D.C. Snipers. We're taking a look back 20 years later on that time that if you were even a school child or anyone older, we'll never forget 3 weeks when there were a sniper or were snipers out there killing people at random. It was terrifying and it was mysterious. It was a year after 9/11, but I think this one hit a lot of people more personally, unless you knew someone specifically who died on 9/11, because going to a restaurant, gassing up your car. We were all potential victims. We were all feeling vulnerable. It was a crazy time.
And it's a time that people will never forget. Now, coming up in today's episode, I traveled to a rural farm-dotted town about an hour and a half outside of Washington, D.C., where the sniper's first victim in the D.C. area has found some peace. October 8th, 2002, the FBI designated the shootings in the DC area as a major case, giving the investigation the name Snipe-mer, a blend of sniper and murder. The official case file from that date reads, during a 6-day period from October 2nd through October 7th, 8 people were randomly shot, resulting in 6 deaths and 2 critically wounded individuals. What investigators didn't know then is that a month earlier, the snipers had already struck.
Yeah, it happened for me, and it happened really in this section of the country on September 5th of 2002.
This is the story of Paul LaRuffa, the first local victim of the D.C. snipers. At the time, he owned a restaurant, Margelina's, in Clinton, Maryland.
I was leaving my restaurant at about 10 after 10 at night, as I had done for 16 years at the time. I left with 2 other people. Because we were conscious of, not that there was a security risk, but it's just common sense, you don't want to leave alone. So I left with 2 other people. And we always checked the parking lot, make sure nobody was hanging around or anything looked, odd. So everything was fine, and all 3 of us left. Our 3 cars are in the parking lot. We all walked to our cars, said goodbye to each other. And I opened the back door of my car, and I put, as I did a lot of times, put my laptop and my bank bag with the receipts and the credit card receipts and cash in the back seat, shut the door. I got in the driver's door, sat down, and I shut the door, and within several seconds, the window next to me exploded. There was a big bang which deafened my ear, my left ear. And the window exploded all over me. That was the first shot, and then there were 4 more shots, and I was shot, which was just the most mentally confusing thing. I mean, you know what's happening, but it's just so crazy that you can't comprehend it. But I knew it, and I slumped over in the seat, and I knew I was bleeding, and but I was conscious and everything. I knew what happened. It became very silent. The whole event took seconds, 5 seconds maybe. You get to get off 5 shots. So I got out of the car. I rose up in my seat and I leaned on the horn just to get attention. That's all I could think about doing. And then I got out of the car. And luckily, one of the people that left with me had a cell phone.
I'm at Marcelina's on Stewart Lane in Clinton, Maryland. I need an ambulance right here. A guy's in shot. A guy came out from behind the store and and shot Paul LaRuffa and stole stuff, and he's bleeding on in the front and back.
We are coming out there, okay?
Okay.
Describe the person that did this.
Young black guy, late teens, I guess. Slight dark jacket with a hood. I mean, like a sweatshirt with a hood.
Where had you been shot? Where were the bullets?
Well, I was shot. One went through my arm into my side, one in my chest, my diaphragm, and then I think because I turned, one went in my spine. And so anyway, they all hit me. They all ended up inside me. And the one that hit near my spine was the x-ray. You can see the bullet and the bullet fragment, and it's about a quarter of an inch from my spinal cord. And they said that was a quarter of an inch from being paralyzed from the waist down. And yet, here I am.
Do you still hear that sound?
The sound was unbelievable, and it's something to do with, I don't know the science of it, but just in a car, you're kind of, not that you're in a vacuum, but it's just magnified. The sound was magnified. When that window broke, it was the loudest thing I ever heard, and it was definitely, I could feel my ear like being underwater. I couldn't hear. You know, everything was muffled. When I hit the horn, I could hear it, but just barely. And I wasn't even sure whether it was working, but it was. I heard the sound, but I also felt it. I felt the air, you know, just blowing in on me, just from that window exploding. Besides being showered with the glass, you know, the windows, they just turn into 1,000 little beads of glass, and that just showered me. But yeah, it was like a concussion thing where you heard the sound, but you felt it. I felt it too. And that really, obviously, that shocked me. And, you know, but when it was over, it went from calamity and craziness to absolute silence. It was like, it was me, and there was no sound at all. And I just, my mind was going at 100 miles an hour. I thought of, it's amazing how many thoughts you can have in a short period of time, but I just thought of 1,000 things at the same time. My family, my wife, and, you know. And then I got up, I said, okay, I gotta do something. I'm not gonna sit here and bleed to death, you know.
It's so amazing that you were even able to move.
Yeah, and I got out of the car and I could talk, but what I didn't realize was as I would talk, I was losing my breath, and I didn't realize it then, but then I found out later, but both my lungs collapsed. You know, the pressure of the blood inside just squashed my lungs. So I was constantly losing, I had less and less ability to breathe. So that's where I said, hurry up, I can't breathe. And on the 911 call, it's pretty dramatic because my friend is talking to the 911 person, and I'm in the you hear my voice say, "Hurry up, I can't breathe."
He's standing, but he's outside the car.
Hurry up!
I don't have him stand. Hurry up. See if he'll get down.
I think he should sit down, Paul.
Hurry up! I'm having trouble breathing.
Sir, try to get him to sit down and not move around.
All right, but I don't want to die here.
We're not going to let that happen. We're coming out there to help you.
They just saved my life. You know, they cut me open, and they didn't know. I mean, they knew I was shot. That's all they didn't know. They don't know who you are and how and where the shots are. So they cut me open from my breastbone to below my navel and start looking for taking out bullets, you know. And then they definitely saved my life.
Two other friends were with LaRuffa as he left the restaurant that night. In an odd coincidence, they all happened to be named Paul. LaRuffa recalls one key moment just after he was shot.
When I got out of the car and stood up, the back door was open, and the light in the car was on, and I looked in, and the back seat was empty. And I said to Paul, I said, "My stuff is gone. He took my," I don't know if I said he took or I just said, "My stuff is gone. They took my stuff." That was the first thing, like, oh my God, how am I going to open tomorrow if, you know, I just was, holy mac, my computer and my bank bag is gone. So yeah, I didn't hear anything. I just realized then, oh, okay, I was shot and somebody took the stuff and that was it.
A random shooting and robbery, it was assumed. At the time, no one realized that Margelina's restaurant was less than a mile from the townhouse where Mildred Muhammad was hiding from her ex-husband, John Allen Muhammad.
And what did you come to learn later about what happened with that money and that laptop?
Well, what they did was they hit the jackpot. I mean, they didn't have a car at the time. They were just traveling on buses and hitchhiking or however they got across country. And they went up to Jersey with that money and paid, I forgot what they paid for that car, but they bought the car with my money.
The Chevy Caprice.
And then they came back to Clinton and shot somebody else who survived. And then they went to Georgia and Alabama, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana. And then they came back to D.C. and started shooting people in early October. So that was the beginning of it. And yeah, my money, I mean, they lived on my money for a month and a half. So they used the computer. They actually used the computer to plan where they were going and who they shot. And it was just crazy to find all that out way later on. Because remember, at the time, nobody knew who shot me. You know, why did somebody come up to Paul LaRuffa and shoot him and steal his stuff? Why didn't they just ask him for, you know, hold him up and ask him? I would have given him the stuff if they came up to me with a gun and said, give me the stuff. But so that was odd that they said, why would somebody just try to kill you first and then take the stuff? And then it all made sense when they were caught. You know, they were pretty crazy, so it made sense that they would have killed me easily. They had no problem with it.
Do you think they had scoped you out first? How did they know?
They did. I don't know how many days they were behind a fence that was around the on one side of the strip shopping center where my restaurant was. They were there for at least a few days, because the other ironic thing that happened is that 2 days before that, this happened on a Thursday, September 5th. 2 days before that, on Tuesday, I left in the same manner with a couple of people and got in my car, and I started it up and I started to pull away and heard a thump, and I said, oh man, something's wrong with the car. Oh, it's a flat tire. So I only lived a mile away. And I said, I am really tired. I'm just going to drive home on the flat tire and I'll change it tomorrow. And that decision saved my life, because he had come out at some point in the night or afternoon or wherever, however long he was there, and slit my tire. And the plan was that I'd get out of my car and then he'd come out and shoot me in the head and do the same thing. So I saved my own life, not knowing, by driving away. And So the next night when I left with a whole bunch of people. There was a party that was an office party, and when that was over and we closed up, they all left. So I think they just said there were too many people there, so they didn't want to do it with all those people. And then the Thursday night is when they did it the second time, the second attempt. But yeah, it was pretty crazy to think. That, I mean, I remember that so vividly that I just said, oh man, I'm too tired to change a spare tire. I'll just drive home. And little did I know that that was a very good decision.
So you mentioned that you kind of went through the sniper experience as everybody else
right.
did. How long were you in the hospital?
I was only in the hospital for 10 days, a little fewer than.
So then you were home.
I got out of the hospital. I just had to leave the hospital. And one of my lungs wasn't fully inflated yet, but the doctor said, I'll let you go home, but if you have trouble, you got to come back. So I said, no, I'm good, because I just couldn't stand being in the hospital any longer. So I tried staying in home in the house, and I couldn't do it. I was paranoid. I mentally, I was just a wreck. I was because I didn't know who shot me, so I was really paranoid. So I was in my house, and all I did was look out the window, then go to the other side of the house and look out the window to see if anybody was there. So I said, this isn't going to work. So I went to the restaurant. I mean, I couldn't work. I was, one of the bullets that went through my left arm injured a nerve, so I couldn't open my hand, and that took like a year. So I couldn't do a lot of work at the restaurant, but I felt a lot more comfortable sitting there and talking to people and stuff like that. So I didn't stay home. I couldn't do it. I did it for like a day, and then I realized I was so paranoid. I just felt better around people.
It's incredible that it was shot five times, and within, what, 2 weeks, you were back at the restaurant?
Yeah, I was back because I felt comfortable there, and people were really nice and, you know, talked to me about, you know, about what happened, how sorry they were. But I just felt so much more comfortable at the restaurant every day. So, you know, so I did. And then I started working. You know, I felt better. I could, well, I had this contraption on my arm that helped me use my hand. So I could make pizzas with one hand. And this one, it would help a little bit. But, so I felt a lot better. Because mentally, for that, from the time I was shot, or from the time I got out of the hospital to the time they were caught, mentally I was a wreck. You know, I just was suffering from, I mean, I functioned fine. I just had the flashbacks every night. Every night I would jump out of bed with that, hear that shot. Just, I knew it was coming. It started the first night I was conscious, after I woke up from the operation, that night was the first time it happened, and it was just shocking. It's so real. It's you know, it's like a nightmare, but it's 10 times more real. It's that you hear the shot, and I would literally wonder why everybody wasn't running into the room, because that shot was so loud. But I'm in the hospital and there was no shot, but in my mind I heard it. It was there, you know. And I knew it was coming, and from the time that night till, it took a while even after they were caught, but shortly after they were caught, the flashbacks went away. But I remember that month of going through that, from September 5th till October 23rd, you know, a month and a half, 2 months, it was terrible.
The search for a killer.
A high-powered rifle loaded with high-velocity bullets.
By mid-October, the Washington region was gripped with fear.
Dial 911. Do not take any action.
Schools shut down activities. People who drove white box trucks stopped going to work.
White delivery trucks are still being stopped and examined.
And no one wanted to stop for gas. Paul says he went through it just like everyone else, not putting his shooting and the sniper incidents together.
You know, we talk about it. But it was a whole different vein. It had nothing to do with me. So when people would come in and we'd talk about sniper, I wouldn't. We had an outdoor cafe, usually between lunch and after lunch rush. I might go out there and sit down for a few minutes at one of the tables, and I wouldn't do that during the sniper, because, you know, I might get shot from, you know, right. I'm out in the open there in the parking lot and pumping gas, you know. And I went through that whole thing about being scared.
There were two other Maryland shootings that September. On the 14th, 22-year-old Rupinder Oberoi was shot and wounded outside Hillendale Beer and Wine. The next day, September 15th, 32-year-old Muhammad Rashid was shot and wounded after closing up Three Roads Liquors in Brandywine, Maryland, just minutes from Paul LaRuffa's restaurant.
Oh, ma'am, I am dying. On 13704, somebody fire me. Brandywine, 13704.
Where are you?
Brandywine, COD course, 13704, Brandywine, I am dying, ma'am.
Somebody shot you?
Yeah.
Okay, where are you shot?
In my belly, stomach. 13704, Brandywine Road. Oh, my.
Okay, I'm going to help you, okay? I want you to sit down right now.
Uh-huh.
Okay, take your shirt off. I want you to take your shirt and put it tightly into the stomach where you were shot. You got to try to stop the bleeding, okay? I'm here with you, okay? All right. Is there anybody around there at all with you, Muhammad?
No, ma'am.
Okay, listen, I got an ambulance. They should be there any minute now.
Oh!
Okay, listen to me. Take deep breaths and don't move. Try to stay as quiet as you can and don't move. And then, did you put anything against where you were shot?
Yeah.
Did you press against there?
Yeah.
Okay, Muhammad, you're doing great.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And in Montgomery, Alabama, two women were shot, closing up a liquor store there. Claudine Parker was killed. Katie Adams survived. That was Saturday, September 21st. All of it and more documented on Paul LaRuffa's stolen laptop.
What was that like for you? Tell me, take me to that moment where somebody must have notified you, hey, we found your laptop.
Well, I initially found out because they said it was a Sony VAIO laptop.
So you heard this on the news?
Yeah. I didn't get confirmation, actual confirmation for a while. It took a few weeks before they actually told me it was mine. But then again, they assumed it was mine. Everybody assumed it was mine. So
you heard on the news that when Malvo and Muhammad were captured, that among the items with them was a Sony VAIO laptop.
Right.
And you went, holy crap.
Yeah.
20 years later, Paul has retired from the restaurant business. He remains grateful for every day.
You know, I was one of the lucky ones. I had a chance to survive and I survived. Most of those people had no chance. They were alive 1 minute and they were dead the next second. You know, people say, have you forgiven him? And I say, yeah, first you have to define forgiveness. And the definition that I use for forgiveness is a definition that states forgiveness is the release of anger towards somebody who has done you harm. So it's something that I have released the anger because, as I said before, if I had spent the last 20 years being as angry as I was 20 years ago, then I let him ruin my life.
That is fascinating. I've heard the name Paul LaRuffa, but you know, I think like a lot of other people, we weren't really sure where he fit in. Some interesting stuff. You mentioned the laptop that was in his car that was stolen by the snipers was actually used to document some of what they did.
That's right. He said that what he found out from the investigators is everything was plotted out on the laptop and where there were shootings. If someone had been killed, there was sort of that skull and crossbones or an X mark. But if someone had been shot but not killed, they would put a frowny face. So clearly they were following what happened with each of their victims.
And like disappointed that a frowny face because the person they shot didn't die.
And later in this podcast series, you'll hear from Paul LaRuffa about coming face to face with the DC snipers in a courtroom. And he'll also give us his thoughts on whether he thinks Lee Boyd Malvo should ever walk free from prison.
And this brings us to episode 3. We're looking at that incredible day, October 3rd, 2002, now 20 years ago, when 5 people were shot and killed in the DC area, one right after another. It was a mind-boggling day if you were in this area or watching the news anywhere in this country and around the world, frankly.
And you know what's interesting, also coming up in the podcast, international news. This story was making headlines everywhere. So we'll bring some more of that to you as well. So you want to stay with us throughout this podcast series. Again, it's 3 Weeks of Hell, the DC Snipers. You can find it on all podcast platforms and also on our website, Fox5DC.com.